and good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I'll just kind of be the coordinator today on At Ease with our guest host coming to you from Veterans Radio East, and Dwight John Zimmerman is comfortably at home, I hope, in Brooklyn. Good morning, Dwight.
Good morning, Dale, and yes, I am. I'm looking out the window right now, and I'm seeing people shoveling the snow. I did my job earlier this morning. It is cold, but I suspect it's probably a little bit warmer than it is with you. We're in the low 20s.
I think we're probably about the same. We had our nice little deep freeze last week where it went down to zero and so forth, and I think you're getting a little bit of our snow now. But we're going to have a warm-up coming this week all the way up to 40 degrees. And I think, you know, everybody's going to be getting out their beach chairs to sit out and get a little sun. You know how that goes. Hold on for just a second, Dwight, and I've got a little announcement to make for our local audience here in the Ann Arbor area, and actually around the country. But this is our local Valentine's for Veterans concert. We mentioned this last week on the program, but this is coming up on February 10th at 2 p.m. at Eastern Michigan University at Pease Auditorium. And this is a concert for veterans. It is free. It is featuring Aaron Tippin, who's a well-known country music star. For those of you that are into country music, but it sounds like it's going to be a great, great program. It is free to the public now. The tickets are available to the public. I don't know how many are left, but if you want more information, give the VA a call at 734-222-7994. 734-222-7994. This is Valentine's for Veterans concerts. There are Valentine's for Veterans activities going on all over the country because the week of February 10th through the 16th is Salute to Veterans Week at all of the VAs around the country, so check them out. Our local one happens to be sponsored by the Foundation for American Veterans, Good Charity Incorporated, Delphi World Headquarters, Customer Care, lots of sponsors, lots of activities. This is a great opportunity to go out and salute your local veteran, and you know it's always a good job to salute your veterans. We always appreciate it when people acknowledge that we, you know, what we did for you. And I think that we have to make sure that people understand that this is not for us. This is for all of you, the country in its entirety. So that's Valentine's for Veterans concert, Sunday, February 10th at 2 p.m., Eastern Michigan University, Pease Auditorium. If you'd like to get your free ticket, call 734-222-7994. All right, back with Dwight.
Well, thank you, Dale. I'm really happy about the guests that we have lined up today. Three really wonderful people. Charles Oldham, editor-in-chief of Faircount Media's line of military-themed magazines and its Defense Media Network website. Chuck's been on here before, and he's going to give us a great update of things. Sandy Linhart is an award-winning children's book writer, and her stories deal with important social themes such as parent separation as a result of deployment, and she's going to be talking about those in her latest release called Pickysaurus Max, about a young dinosaur suffering from a condition known as sensory processing disorder. And I'm particularly happy to have Karen Jeffrey. She's the president of Veterans Moving Forward, a nonprofit organization that provides free of charge, fully trained service dogs to veterans suffering physical and mental health challenges. I discovered this while doing some research for an article, and it's an amazing organization, so I'm really happy that she's here on our show.
I think it sounds great. We've been doing a couple of programs recently on service dogs that have been helping out people, veterans especially, and it's great to find out that there's really a full-fledged organization that's out there to actually help these men and women.
Yeah, and jumping to a little personal thing here, this fall I'm going to have a new book out, a Civil War quiz book. Really, really happy about this one. It was exciting. There's more than 500 questions, you know, true, false, fill in the blank, multiple choice, you know, whole nine yards. And I thought as a little bit of fun here that I'd toss out one of the questions for people to think about. And when we introduce our second guest, I'll be providing the answer.
Okay.
So here it is. True or false? The two political leaders in the Civil War were Jefferson C. Davis and Abraham Lincoln. Now, we're doing a kind of an easy question here, but again, true or false, the two political leaders in the Civil War were Jefferson C. Davis and Abraham Lincoln. The answer will be there when we introduce our second guest.
Is that a trick question? I'm trying to look at this. Quick, everybody, to the Internet. see what's going on. All right, Dwight. Well, we will be back with Dwight and his first guest in just a moment. You're listening to Veterans Radio, and we will be right back with Dwight Zimmerman.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and I just wanted to let everybody know, if you want to answer that tough question about the Civil War, you can give us a call here at 877-573-7825, or you can go to Twitter and tweet us at Veterans Radio. And we've got our professionally trained staff keeping an eye out on what's going on our Twitter account. So you can do that. Just go to Veterans Radio. No, whatever. How do we do that one? Veterans Radio at Twitter. You guys can figure it out much better than we can. We also have Facebook at Veterans Radio also. So if you want to do that, we're learning. Next week, your flyer is going to be amazing. You won't believe it when you receive that. But if you want to give us the secret answer to the secret question of who were the two leaders during the Civil War, Jefferson C. Davis or Abraham, I don't even know what his middle initial was, Lincoln, give us a call at 877-573-7825. Sorry, Dwight, to step on you like that.
That's okay.
That's why
not a problem.
I know. We're very professional. So now, without further ado, here is Dwight John Zimmerman and his first guest.
Thank you, Dale. Okay, Chuck, are you there? Chuck?
Can you hear me?
There we go. Hi, Chuck. Hello, everyone. I'm happy to introduce Charles Oldham, Editor-in-Chief of Faircount Media, and its website, DefenseMediaNetwork.com. Welcome back, Chuck.
Thanks a lot, Dwight. I hate to say this, but I'm looking out the window at sunshine, and it's probably going to be in the high 70s to low 80s today here in Tampa.
Well, that's a burden that you have to carry for the rest of the nation. That's all I can say.
It is. I feel very bad about that. So how are you doing?
I bet you do. Anyway, so it's been a busy year for you guys down at Faircount. I mean, there's been an awful lot going. Could you just give us a quick overview of Faircount for our listeners who may not be familiar with it?
Sure. Faircount is, I guess, what you would call a niche publisher. We do print editions, both for clients, and we also have a series of our own publications that we put out. We work with clients such as the Coast Guard, Army Materiel Command, Army Corps of Engineers. In the past, we've worked with NASA. We do commissioning publications for the commissioning of various ships in the Navy, all sorts of different things with most of the time with government and federal partners, but also with industry and with various organizations worldwide. So this has been – it's been a pretty busy year. So far, this year has been especially busy. We've got four publications, print publications, going out over last week and this coming week. So We're pretty much tearing our hair out at the moment trying to get everything done. And plus, of course, we've got the website and the digital editions of the print editions that we produce.
What are some of the recent print editions that you can talk about?
Well, we're working on the Coast Guard publication. We do two per year with the Coast Guard, and that one's supposed to be coming out or going to the printer in the next week or so. We're doing our own edition of The Year in Defense. That's our review. We do a quarterly defense magazine, and this issue that we're working on now is sort of the year-end review where we wrap up all the events of 2012. This year, like recent years, is more difficult because the centerpiece of the book traditionally has been the defense budget. And as you know, the defense budget is still up in the air. We've had an authorization bill passed, but we still don't have an appropriations bill. And there's also the you know, sword of sequestration hanging over everyone. So it's difficult to try and come to a conclusion about where we stand with the defense budget when everything is really still up in the air.
Yeah, that's for sure. Let's now talk about your website, defensemedianetwork.com.
Sure.
This is an amazing site. It's chock-a-block, full of stuff. So please, tell our listeners about this.
Well, it's a combination of things. We have defense news on there, definitely. We have we cover Homeland Security. We cover the various aspects of defense, aerospace and land forces, naval forces, special operations, military medicine, veterans affairs, and all of those subjects are covered on this one site. And as far as the aim of it, it's a bit of a mixture. Some of it, about half of it is news, and the other half is historical or more in-depth stories. So we have, I think, an interesting mix of history and present-day articles, and I think you'll see that as soon as you go onto the homepage of the website.
Yes, again, that's www.defensemedianetwork.com, and I'm on it right now. And I'm seeing a nice mix of history and topical events. In fact, you just posted one that I'm a little bit personally involved with.
Right, the Alcan Highway piece. Yeah, they're really interesting. You could probably discuss that a little bit.
Well, that was one that, just a little bit of background, I'm doing a World War II 70th anniversary series of articles for Defense Media Network, and it's presenting the World War II in a chronological fashion, so that basically, like, events that are happening and that happened in January of 1943, I'm writing, they're being presented right now in January 2013. And one of them was the green light for the Alcan Highway, and that is just an incredible engineering feat. It was compared to the construction of the Panama Canal. You can well imagine what it was like for these engineers and crew to be working in temperatures reaching 70 below zero Fahrenheit. Not fun.
And when it's not freezing, the mosquitoes are all over you.
Yeah, they had mosquito netting on them and everything, and it's an absolutely incredible story. I'm also looking right here. You got a article about Ray Nagin, the indictment of him,
right.
The former mayor of New Orleans.
Yeah, that article it's a commentary piece. It's actually by a gentleman named Rich Cooper who worked for the Department of Homeland Security at the time of Katrina. So he had personal experiences, being a part of that and trying to help out the people of New Orleans. So he has a personal viewpoint on the mayor, the former mayor, and those days. So it's an interesting take on things.
Yeah, and another one is a recent posting is about the new types of prosthetics in your VA military medicine section.
Right. There's there have been so many advances in body armor and, you know, Kevlar helmets and medical care, frankly, that people are surviving wounds that would have been so traumatic in the past on the battlefield that they wouldn't have made it. And it's great that they're surviving. The downside, of course, is that you have people who you have a lot more amputees, for example. We also have traumatic brain injuries from the blast effects of IEDs. And, of course, there's PTSD. The traumatic amputations, the advances that they've made in prosthesis are just amazing. I mean, they've it used to be in the past that what you worried about was hopefully your amputation would be below a significant joint so that the prostheses could fit below that, but you would still have a knee or you would still have an ankle or an elbow or what have you. And that's always been the most difficult thing to overcome if you had lost that joint. Well, now they've come up with prostheses that can fit on your stump, and they have their own joints, and the joints are very often computer controlled. And they can embed sensors and even chips in the brain is what one of the things they're working on now, so that your brain or the remaining muscles in the stump are able to control the joints and the servos on the leg or the arm or the hand to closely mimic what you would get from an actual arm or leg. So the advances have just been incredible.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm scrolling down on the site, and I'm seeing articles about Army dentistry, battle theater treatment reshaped by the demands of war, helping veterans transition into civilian life, outside opportunities for Marines, military mental health care update. You wanted to say something?
Right. Well, we put out a print publication called the Year in Veterans Affairs and Military Medicine, and so we definitely have an interest in articles that deal with those aspects. So military medicine, definitely veterans affairs. This is one of the rare weeks when we don't have something sitting there up front on the homepage today that's about veterans benefits or TRICARE or the defense budget, because certainly veterans are very concerned about some of the changes that are ongoing now due to various budget cuts. And those are very popular articles. We get a lot of comments on those, and we get a lot of readership of those. And again, it sort of circles back to the whole defense budget debacle, where we still don't know where we stand. And we've also had the first talk these days about cutting directly into benefits for veterans. So it's an interesting time.
Yes, indeed. And I see here another one that I. Probably of interest to a number of people would be this article, Saving Service Members' Homes from Illegal Foreclosure.
Right. Right. There have been laws in place to try and prevent that from happening, but unfortunately, as with lots of veterans' benefits, there are veterans who aren't aware of it. And this program is basically about trying to make sure that the laws that are already in place are enforced, and to try and keep veterans' homes from being foreclosed on, because they're going through the same issues that people in the rest of society are going through with this housing crisis, which is still ongoing. There have been a new round of foreclosures that have begun again, so it's a very serious issue, and it's definitely something that should not be happening to people who have served their country. And as I said, there have been laws and various regulations in place, but the organizations or entities that want to, basically foreclose on those homes and make their money have been ignoring them or trying to circumvent them.
Yeah, that's really a sad thing that there are people out there that have been taking advantage of, veterans and their families, and especially given what they've been going through, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
What other highlights can you tell our listeners about?
Well, one of the other interesting articles on the homepage today is it's about the X-47B, which is an unmanned combat air vehicle. It's the first of its kind, really, being tested aboard a Navy aircraft carrier. Now the this is a game changer, without a doubt. If they can make this concept work, then it really changes naval aviation. And they just recently went through a test where, although it seems pretty quotidian, the idea was they had to find out if they could make the aircraft work on the deck. Making it land and take off seems like the big obstacle, but in fact there have been landing systems that the Navy's used for automatic landing of aircraft for years. The problem is, on the deck, when you're in a manned aircraft, a flight deck director will tell you where to park and will signal you to get out of the wires after you've trapped aboard. With an unmanned aircraft, there's nobody in it. So how do you direct it? Well, they've come up with a wireless handheld controller, and they went about testing this aboard the carrier Truman recently and found that it passed with flying colors. So hopefully this means that they've overcome a major obstacle, and late this year, they're going to actually do the landing and takeoff of the unmanned aircraft from the carrier. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. I'm looking at this article called Army Evaluations Find Their Way to Equipment Fielding. Tell us a bit more about that, please.
Well, you know, years ago, the Army was working on what they called future combat systems. And it was going to be a collection of vehicles, various robots, all sorts of different pieces of equipment that were going to be a part of a single system that was going to take the Army into the future. And as the years went by and the budgets went down and more money had to be devoted to the current deployments, and also, you know, some systems didn't seem to be working out in the development process, more and more things fell out of this program. And essentially, when we finally came to the end, what was left was the network, a couple of robots, and you know, a few other little associated systems. So what the Army has done is that they're spiraling up, as they call it. It's a spiraling process. The systems that they test in these network integration evaluations, they then test in the evaluations, try and make foolproof, and then that equipment ends up going out to various units. And that's what's happening now, is that the Army has managed to get the network equipment to work right, and that equipment is going on various vehicles that is then going to be sent out to the brigade combat teams. There's some soldier equipment associated with the network with communications and sensors that is going to be spiraled out to the brigade combat teams, and so on and so forth. And they're doing this in a really smart way in that they go through these evaluations where they actually field test them out in the field, and they have a unit specially devoted to doing this, and they really try and make sure that these things are going to really work before they put them out. And then at the same time, they're doing it in fairly small lots. So they're not making a production decision where they're making tens of thousands of pieces of equipment before they're completely tested. So it's a smart way of doing it, but it's also, these days, the only way they can do it.
Yes, I would say. What are some of the upcoming additional, you mentioned the Coast Guard publication, any other ones that our listeners would be interested in?
Well, one of the things we're excited about is that we're going to be working on a commissioning publication for the commissioning of the USS Arlington, which is a dock landing ship, LPD-24. Arlington is one of three sisters, New York, Arlington, and Somerset, which are named for in honor of the 9/11 attacks. Basically, the Arlington represents the Pentagon, which was hit on 9/11. New York, of course, was representative of the people who lost their lives in the World Trade Center. And Somerset has to do with Flight 93 and the people who fought the terrorists in the cockpit of that airplane and unfortunately perished in Somerset County. So it's an honor to work on the book, obviously. It's a very big deal for us. These three ships are unique in a way. And so that's one that's upcoming that we're very excited about working on. We'll be doing more of the quarterly defense publications. Of course, we'll be working on more Coast Guard publications. Army Materiel Command will be coming up pretty soon, and so will Corps of Engineers. We just finished one Corps of Engineers publication, and we do those annually, and we're actually working on the digital edition of that one now. And then pretty soon, before you know it, we'll be working on the next edition.
Yes, indeed. And I hope to be a part of it.
Absolutely. Sure.
Okay. The website, again, is www.defensemedianetwork.com. We're getting close to the time we're going to have our break. Chuck, I'd like you to quickly just tell our listeners some of the contributors. I mean, obviously, I'll talk about me, but you've got a pretty good lineup of writers who've contributed to your publications.
Well, I hate to do this because I'm sure I'll forget somebody or overlook somebody. We have so many writers who work for us regularly. Robert F. Dorr, Walter Boyne, John Gresham, yourself, Scott Gourley, J.R. Wilson, Eric and Jan Tegler. We just have there's just so many people who write for us regularly that we're pretty lucky in the quality of our contributors.
Yes, I would say I've been very fascinated by all this stuff, and I do urge our listeners to go to the website, www.defensemedianetwork.com. You can find yourself spending an awful lot of time there because there's an awful lot of material. Just looking at the tag cloud, you get military news, military history, all the different branches, history pieces, articles about fighter aircraft, development programs. It's really an extensive site, and I'm just and it's very easy to navigate. You can just zip right through. It's very impressive. So,
well, as you know, Dwight, we do try and do something that's a little bit off the beaten path. We don't go for the sort of history pieces that everybody knows already from high school. We try and look at things from a different angle or talk about things that a lot of people don't know about.
Yes, and I've learned an awful lot myself. Chuck, I want to thank you so much for being on the show this morning. Good luck to you, and don't be too warm down there in 70-degree Tampa.
I'm going to put my tank top on now.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you again, Chuck.
Take care.
Wow,
you
Dwight,
too.
That's terrific. Thank you, Chuck, also from Veterans Radio. Many of those people that he was mentioning, I recognize the names. They've been on Veterans Radio, and so it's pretty cool. Nice job.
Yes, indeed. So we have a call-in guest who...
We do. In just a second here, we have somebody who wants to answer that tough question that Dwight gave. Could you repeat the question, Dwight?
Yes. True or false, the two political leaders in the Civil War were Jefferson C. Davis and Abraham Lincoln.
And joining us on the line right now from Michigan is Joan Ford. Joan, you have an answer for this, right?
Yep. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
That was a good broadcast just now. I have to check out that website. And
Thank you.
That is correct. Abraham Lincoln was the commander-in-chief of the Union, and Jefferson Davis was the commander-in-chief of the Confederate. And by
the way, yes, Jefferson Davis was, but that was Jefferson F. Davis, Jefferson Finnis Davis.
Aha.
I didn't know that.
See? Jefferson Columbus Davis, get this, was a major general in the Union Army.
Okay.
Oh, hey, see, I told you it was tricky. I knew there was some sort of trick inside that one.
Yeah, I don't even see an initial. I don't see a middle name.
Usually
now you're going to have to get the book.
Written about Jefferson Davis, but Jefferson Davis's full name was Jefferson Finnis, F-I-N-I-S, Davis. And that was the president of the Confederacy. Jefferson Columbus Davis was a major general in the Union Army. And you can well imagine that he probably got ribbed an awful lot.
I was going to say, that would be a tough job. That would have to be a tough job. Well, John, I'm sorry that we had to play this game on you, but...
I'm partly right.
Yes, you were partly right. That's right.
See, this is the fun part where there are some thoughtful little questions, and... Next time on the show, I'll have another question for people.
All right. Well,
okay.
Thank you, Joan, very much.
Well, I don't get the prize.
Oh, yeah. Well, you always get the prize, Joan. You know that. Thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to everyone.
And you.
Bye-bye.
All right, Dwight, coming up next, you've got is your next guest is Sandra Linhart.
Yes, indeed.
She'll be talking about her books for more of the children's, looks like more like children's books, but some of their books are really cool. She's got a whole series of books called the Boots series, and I'm anxious to hear about that. So we will be back soon with Dwight Zimmerman and his guest. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We will be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. First Lieutenant Deming Bronson was struck by an exploding enemy hand grenade, receiving deep cuts on his face and the back of his head, but continued to lead his men. Details after this.
There's always a moment of truth where I say, look, it's a put up or shut up. And it was time to put up. I had crossed that thin line. It was 100 plus degrees. We were hot. We were on fire. We were yelling our hearts out. You could feel the intensity rising. Even in our tiredness, even in our weakness, even in our pain, we continued to push. I told myself, you can suck up the pain for another mile and a half, and you will be a Marine. Not many people believe that I could do it. I don't know where I got the energy from. I don't know where the pain went to. But all I know is that I had what it took. I am a United States Marine.
AFC Errol Willis proved he could be one of us. Can you? Call 1-800-MARINES. Maybe you could be one of the few and the proud.
Bronson, although injured, participated in the action that resulted in the capture of an enemy dugout with a great number of prisoners. On the afternoon of the same day, he was painfully wounded in the left arm by an enemy rifle bullet. And after receiving first aid treatment, he was directed to the rear. Disregarding these instructions, Bronson remained on duty with his company throughout the night, although suffering from severe pain and shock. The next morning, his regiment resumed its attack. Bronson's company was left to support the attacking line. In spite of his wounds, he joined in the capture of the village. After the capture, he remained and participated in the capture of an enemy machine gun, he himself killing the enemy gunner. Shortly after this encounter, the company was forced to retire due to the heavy enemy artillery barrage. Bronson, who was the last man to leave the advanced position, was again wounded in both arms by an enemy high-explosive shell. He was then assisted to cover by another officer who applied first aid. Although bleeding profusely and faint from the loss of blood, Bronson remained with survivors of the company throughout the night of the second day, refusing to go to the rear for treatment. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
And we're back on Veterans Radio with our special presentation, At Ease, with our host today, Dwight Zimmerman. Dwight, you're on.
Thank you, Dale. And I'm really happy to welcome my next guest, Sandy Linhart. Sandy, are you on the line there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now. Welcome.
Okay. Good morning.
Yes, how are you?
I am tired. How are you?
Well, you've been writing away, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I bet it's a little bit cooler in your neck of the woods compared to Chuck down in Tampa.
He took away my wind. You know, I was going to tell you, it's almost 50 here this morning at, 7:30 in Colorado, which is not typical. But, you know, he blew my thunder, so I'll just not mention it.
Well, but I would say 50 degrees, you know, that far inland and in the mountains, that's not too shabby.
It's amazing. It's nice.
It's a heck of a lot warmer than it is here in Brooklyn, New York, that's for sure.
And that I'm thankful for.
Listen, you've written some wonderful books here. These are children's books, children's picture books. Some of them have won awards, and I'd like you to, and they have some important social themes. I'd like you to talk about them, please.
Well, the Boots books, Daddy's Boots and Mama's Boots, are, like you said, deployment books. They're made to start a conversation between you and your daughter or son. I said daughters because I have daughters. Regarding why you're leaving them, when my kids were little, they always wanted to know why Daddy was leaving them to save somebody else. And that's a hard question to answer, you know, why are you leaving me to help somebody else? Don't, you know, aren't I as important as this person you're going to see? And they were gone for a long, long time. So the What If books are geared to help with the separation anxiety. What if he doesn't remember me? What if she can't remember me? What if I don't pick him out in the crowd when they, you know, when they come into whatever, usually it's a gymnasium or something, when they're coming back from deployment and you're standing around anticipating your soldier coming back and the emotions are high and kids are like, well, they all look the same. They're all wearing their green uniforms and they all look the same. And which one's my dad or mom? And so there's a lot of anxiety for children that it's overlooked a lot of times, because there's a lot of anxiety for every member in the family when a service member is deployed. And I'm not talking just war, because, as you know, service members are deployed all the time in health efforts and operations other than war, Katrina, forest fires, and they're gone quite a bit of the time. If you're married to a military, you know that you're pretty much the mother and father of the house until they come home. And there are sometimes you need to be able to let your children explain. And these books kind of, well, I hope they bring out the questions that the child is afraid to ask or doesn't know how to put into words, so they can have a discussion with mom or dad or grandma or grandpa. Usually when a mother, excuse me, is in the military, she's either a dual parent or a single mom. So the grandpa what if is geared to the child being with the grandparents because there is no... Now, I'm not... I don't mean there's never a father at home, but more than likely the father's also deployed or the mom is single. So that's why it's Grandpa What If.
Yeah, you have a website here. Can you give our listeners the URL, please?
www.s, as in Sandra, M as in Miller, linhart.com. And it's just a little website. It links to all my books. You can get my books on all internet stores, and perhaps your store in your hometown can order it. I don't know. It all depends on what they do, but they're easily procured over the internet, which is a nifty thing.
Yes. Well, your latest book, Pickysaurus Back, was a little bit of a departure, but it still has a strong social theme. Tell our listeners about that, please.
Well, Pickysaurus Mac is a dinosaur who can't stand food, and he's a nothing-vore. My number four daughter, Marcy, has what is called sensory processing disorder. She has a real hard time with all of her senses exponentially. She hears, tastes, smells everything so much more than what, I hate to use the word normal, people do, but textures will make her vomit, smells also. And so she has a real hard time eating any kind of food. She has five foods that she can't eat. And all her life, people have told her, oh, she's just picky, make her eat. And actually, children with sensory processing disorder could starve to death because they don't just eat. There's a lot of many different aspects to sensory processing disorder. Some people can hear real well. The tags hurt their back, you know, on the back of the shirt. Their tags can hurt their neck and chafe them, and just a whole bunch of different sensory issues. Hers is primarily taste, and so Pickysaurus Mac was born out of that. The tolerance of the foods is what helps a child, not forcing them to feed, but helping them learn to try different foods and try to tolerate different textures and smells and tastes. And so Pickysaurus goes through his day trying all different foods, and actually not eating, but then he his friends are worried about him, and he just really doesn't know what to do. It doesn't solve his problem, but it does give, like I said, another reason for children to be able to voice their concerns and for parents to open up the dialogue between their child and themselves. Also, we've had nothing but problems with the school system with her disorder. They really don't know anything about sensory processing disorder, nor should they, but it's been an eye-opening experience to try to show her teachers and the nutritionists at the schools that, you know, not one size fits all. Don't treat her any differently, but, you know, please don't single her out and make her the laughing stock. So that was just, all my books are pretty much a work of heart. I really put myself into them because they really mean a lot to me, as well as the other children I see suffering with SPD or watching their parents deploy. I don't write just children's books, but that's primarily all I have published right now.
Well, you do have some other books, Jones Blue, Buck Jeep, and tell us about that series.
That is a chapter book series for 8 to 11-year-olds. That's the first book I have published. It's a four-book series, Jones, Jeep, Buck, and Blue, The Elementary Adventures Of. I'm working on the second set, Stuck in the Middle, where they go through middle school. But The Elementary Adventures are these four children who are in elementary school. It's kind of a Nancy Drew-type mystery, fun mystery, not too deep. It's, you know, geared for the 8-year-olds. Jones is a military brat that has to relocate after her dad is injured in the war, and her best friend, Blue, has a loss of her own, and they end up moving together to Lander, Wyoming, which is where I'm from, born and raised. You write what you know, right?
Yep.
And in their adventures, they meet Buck, who is a Northern Arapaho Indian, and then they meet Jeep, who rounds out the crew, and they just have these fun little adventures and talk about a lot of social issues as well, I guess you could say, in their conversations. And they deal with loss, and they deal with heartache, and I hope they have a lot of fun in it.
Mm, yes, indeed.
Well, not with the heartache, but.
Well, still, I've been very impressed with your body of work. It's been fun, you know, meeting you at the Military Writers Society of America conferences, that's where I met you and got to know you. And as I said, been very impressed with what you do. Sandy's website again is www.smlinhart.com, and if you go on Amazon or Barnes and Noble, I'm sure as you can get her books as well. They're very well written, I have to say.
Thank you.
It's true. So, Sandy, I want to thank you so much for being our guest this morning. And
thanks for having me, Dwight.
Yep. And good luck with Pickysaurus Mac and all the other books and your next project. When's that expected out?
Hopefully by July. It's called Mixed Up. It's another children's picture book. It's Mixed Up, My Aunt's Mysteries, kind of a play on my ancestries. And it's about how we're all diverse and all of our makeup, the different, for instance, I'm not just Anglo-American. I have Indian. I have Irish, English, you know, Scandinavian. In my makeup. So it's basically a book about how diverse we are within ourselves and how we need to embrace those diversities and learn from all of our ancestors and not just a sect or whatever. We've all overcome and have become a great nation. And so,
okay. Sandy, sorry to cut you off, but we have we're coming on to our break. Thank you so much again, and good
luck.
You're
welcome. Thanks for having me. Thank you, Dwight.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Dale.
All right, Dwight, thank you very much. That's cool. I love those children's books that help out the people that are deployed. We'll be right back with Dwight's next guest right after this.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill. The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we have a little Sousa-thon going today with our bumps for everybody who's always asking us where do we get our music. Those are all John Philip Sousa marches. Dwight's coming up with his last guest today, and I think it's going to be very interesting. I want to remind people, if you have a question that you'd like to ask Dwight or his guest, give us a call here at Veterans Radio at 877-573-7825. Okay, Dwight, you're on.
Thank you, Dale. And I'm really happy and proud to welcome my next guest, Karen Jeffries. Karen, are you there?
I sure am, Dwight. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Listen, I discovered Veterans Moving Forward when I was writing an article for the upcoming FairCount publication on the Coast Guard about this service dog named Nathan, and that's how I discovered your organization, as I said, and I would like you to tell our listeners about this very fascinating group that you have.
Okay, I'm delighted to. I love talking about what we do at Veterans Moving Forward. We are a public charity in the Northern Virginia area with the goal of being national when we're properly funded and have tons and hundreds of more volunteers. We were founded about 2.5 years ago as a veteran-focused organization, very much veteran-centric, to help veterans move forward with their lives, primarily through recovery and rehabilitation after an injury or a wound or an incident, such as an IED explosion or a motor vehicle accident. We learned that canines and properly trained dogs that can work as therapy dogs make such a difference, and they motivate the men and women to take their recovery and rehabilitation, to go through the painful process and just work harder at being better. And Nathan is one of those assistance dogs in training who has benefited many, many veterans in the course of his short 2 years.
Yes. You have a website, correct?
I do. The website is Vets Forward, like a vanity license plate, VETSFWD.org, VETSFWD.org. And people can learn a lot about our mission vision. They can click on pictures of the dogs, learn about the dogs, as well as the namesakes, because each of our assistance dogs in training are named after a veteran who is deceased from any of the services, any ranks and rates, pay grades. And we tell their story on a daily basis when we are socializing the dogs and training the dogs. Every time we're out in public, people will say, wow, look at that great golden retriever. We'll say, yes, his name is Nathan. And he was named after Petty Officer Third Class Nathan Bruckenthal, a native of Long Island, who was a Coast Guardsman who was killed in 2004. And we tell a story and we remind people that veterans include the Coast Guard members as well as the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, and the Marines.
How many dogs has your organization trained and mated with veterans so far?
Well, we're just 2 years old, and it takes about a little bit over 2 years old, and it takes 2 years old from puppyhood till the dogs are ready to be placed. So we have placed our first service dog full-time with a Marine combat veteran, and that happened a couple months ago. Nathan turns 2 years old tomorrow, and he's meeting a couple veteran candidates this weekend to see which of them might be the right mix for him and how he can best serve them. But our teams, we have therapy teams, of which we have over 35 registered therapy teams that engage in therapy with clinicians that are treating veterans. And some of those dogs came to us as adults, 2- and 3-year-old adults, and some of them were puppies that we worked through the training pipeline. And as we were preparing them to be a one-on-one, full-time, 24-hour-a-day assistance dog for one individual, we have them engage in therapy an hour at a time, a couple times a week, so we can further identify, is this dog better suited for somebody with physical issues or somebody with a psychological, mental, emotional issue? It's very important that we match up the right candidate with the dog and the right dog skill set with the right veteran so that we can help the veteran move forward with their life.
Can you tell our listeners what exactly goes into the training for these types of dogs?
Absolutely. Well, we get the puppies right out of the litter, and we work with breeders that are aware of the needs of a service dog as opposed to a hunting dog or a family pet. And we watch them check their temperament and personality once the puppies are 2, 3, 4 weeks old. And about 8 weeks of age, we procure the puppies. Most of them are donated. Some of them we have to pay for. And we then get them into the home of a puppy raiser who will take full responsibility of that dog for a year and a half. Veterans Moving Forward provides them with some of the assistance. We provide them with the professional training, and we guide them on what to do to socialize the puppy. So once the puppies are about 4 months old, they're fully house-trained, and they have some basic skills and manners, we put them in a little vest that designates them as a service dog in training, and they go everywhere with their puppy raisers. I mean, they go to the barbershop, they go to the grocery store, they go to the drugstore, they go to the oil change, et cetera. They go everywhere with them to work, and they learn all the environments where a veteran will have to be at some point. Now, the first visit to the drugstore, maybe 30 seconds, get out of the car, put on the vest, let everybody ooh and ah over your adorable puppy and say, excuse me, we're working right now, we'll get right back to you. You walk through your front door, and you go back to the car. And the next time, it may be 2 minutes because now you get through the sliding doors, and you get down the first aisle, and the puppy may be overwhelmed, and you take the puppy back out. But it's a slow process of introducing the puppy to everything in everyday life, food, smells, people, noises, et cetera.
Right. Now, if one of our listeners wants to give your organization a donation, how can they do so?
Well, they can go to our website, VetsForward, VetsFWD.org, and in the top right-hand corner, we have a circular button that says Donate, or you can drop down to one of the tabs that say How You Can Help, and people can write us a check and mail it to the post office box. They can use their credit card, use PayPal, or they can, as I said, they can write a check and send it to us. We also accept corporate matching programs. If somebody's company, let's say Bank of America, says we will match whatever funds our employees do, then they can put us into that program, and then we get double the bang because somebody will match that money.
That's really great. I'm on your website now. I'm on the page that says Dogs in Service with Veterans, and what I was impressed with is, boy, the number of dogs and actually a diversity of the breeds. It's not just any one breed.
Well, primarily for the service dogs that we intend to be 24 hours a day one-on-one service dogs, we have found, and the industry in general has found, that the Labradors and the Golden Retrievers are probably the best, most widely accepted, very smart, very gentle, very capable. For the therapy dog work and for the comfort dogs, then we can branch out further with very, very well-trained dogs, such as a German Shepherd mix or of a mix of something else. We had a standard poodle, German Shepherd, Border Collie, et cetera. These dogs have proven themselves. They've been assessed and evaluated by numerous people that they have the right personality and temperament to help other people.
Okay. When we're talking about the trainers themselves, I take it these are people who come from a variety of backgrounds, but also are registered with other organizations that are, they are specifically trained for this?
Right. Well, our puppy raisers can be first-time puppy raiser volunteers, and then they are guided by our professional people that are professional dog trainers and people that have 10, 20, 30 years, or even 40 years experience raising and training and placing service dogs. So we have members of our team. They're either volunteers for us or they're paid consultants for us that will meet with the puppy raisers once a week, twice a week, three times a week, for one-on-one instruction and guidance, outings and house calls, as well as group classes to teach the puppy raisers how to socialize and train these dogs. And then at some point, the dogs come back to our organization for an intensive boot camp experience, if you will, to get more refinement of their specific skills and talents.
Okay, what sort of follow-through do you provide once you have a match with a veteran and a dog?
Right. Well, that's very important. And that also differentiates us from some other organizations. We do a probationary period and placement with the veteran and the dog. We visit their home. We check out their lifestyle. Do they live alone? Do they have to navigate stairs? Do they get on the bus? Do they work? Do they not work, et cetera? So we help them with that. We then ensure that the veteran and the dog can pass the public access test before the dog is permanently placed. And then we check on them again 30 days later, 45 days later, 90 days later, and 6 months and 1 year. So we don't just place the dog, walk away, say, God bless you, and take care of yourself. We're there to refine the skills. What do they need help with? Did anything change? Something that the dog was doing perfectly for them, now all of a sudden something's a little goofy for them. How can we help them? So we stay in touch with our veterans, and we do the follow-up. And we have a three-year contract with them where the veterans also have a bit of responsibility to pay back and pay it forward and help other veterans as they are capable and when they are able to share their story with another veteran or go out in public with us and say, look at what this service dog has been able to do for me and my life and my family and to help me move forward in my recovery, rehabilitation toward a better, healthier, more stable life.
Well, thank you so much, Karen. This has really been fascinating. I'm very happy that you've been on the show. If you're interested, it's Veterans Moving Forward, www.vetsfwd.org. Karen, thank you so much for being a guest on our program, and I'd like to have you, back here again in a few months to get an update.
I would love that, Dwight, and then we'll be able to tell the success story of Nathan. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Dwight. That's terrific. I want to thank you so much for having her on. I think it's a great story. I was looking at that. We had a guest on our program a couple of weeks ago, Luis Montalvan, who has
right.
his dog entitled Until Tuesday. So if you want to find out how necessary these dogs are, this is where you got to go. Thank you very much, Dwight. That's it for this week. Coming
thank
up next
you.
Week, we're going to be doing a program on the 45th anniversary of the Tet Offensive, and we want to make sure that if you have any suggestions or people that would like to get on the program, let us know. You can send me an email at dale@veteransradio.net, and we'll try to get you in on the program. So until next week, I want to thank Nina, Brian, Maria, and I think Bob's even in the back also, and Joan, too. So until then, you are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.